Blog Talk Radio.
I can hear him banging. He's trying to get in.
He's getting close to the door. I'm going to go ahead and get the gun out. It's a shotgun. It's large.
Welcome to Reach Out America Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Raquel Okyai. The program is Imploding the Illusion. Thanks for listening in. I have a great program planned for tonight. It's an explosive story of public corruption in the state of Louisiana, St. Tammany Parish. It's a story that I've been covering for a couple of years, or maybe 3 years or so, but what we have is some really good attorneys and activists who are being vocal, who are fighting the system, and who have been very successful in fighting some of the corruption. I have someone who is on the ground. His name is Danny Abel. He's a civil rights attorney, very well known, and very good attorney, and he's out there and very popular, fighting the good fight, really, for the county in Louisiana. He is on the line. Danny, I just want to say hi and thank you for coming on the show.
Good evening. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. I kind of want you to, there's so many things to talk about on this case, on all that's going on, and maybe I could just lead into the idea that right now in St. Tammany Parish, the district attorney, former district attorney, has been indicted by the federal government, by a grand jury. Is he in jail right now?
No, he's out awaiting trial in January.
Okay.
Walter Reed is the former district attorney for St. Tammany, well, for the 22nd Judicial District, which is St. Tammany Parish and Washington Parish. He has been involved in endless amounts of criminal activities, including all kinds of Hobbs Act violations where he uses the district attorney's office for personal gain. And I know that you keep up with this. But yesterday, one of the ministers who refers business to him, and who is also involved in a prostitution scheme, one of the ministers, Reverend Cox, served with a bill of information yesterday about fraud, and it involves him generating cases and business for the former district attorney, soon to be, convicted, Walter Reed.
That I'm sure that doesn't surprise you because it's all intertwined, it seems. The DA also has a connection with the sheriff's office, Sheriff Jack Strain.
That's
a
correct.
Former
and
DA.
They cover for each other. And it's interesting, and here is the most outrageous thing that almost anybody, and nobody has ever heard of, is that Walter Reed, the district attorney, while he was district attorney, was part of a private civil law firm. The law firm's name is McCraney Sistrunk. He became of counsel and a partner in that law firm, and he prosecutes people to cover up for the McCraney Sistrunk insurance carriers. And McCraney Sistrunk and Walter Reed's private law firm represents the sheriff's office and sheriff's deputies who beat people up, as has been extensively documented in the Shane Gates case, which I know is what you, you know, hope to talk about tonight.
Yes, I do. I definitely do. And just to recap, that the same attorney, that the former district attorney was in a private law firm that was the insurance carrier for the sheriff's office. So that's your Hobbs Act, or at least one Hobbs Act connection there. So the
Absolutely.
DA was able, yeah, so the DA was able, the DA and the sheriff were able to work together. And isn't it true that that attorney's office, McCrane and Sistruck, I think you said, don't they routinely represent law enforcement officers and law enforcement agencies? So that district attorney
yes.
being directly involved, you know, really has a negative effect.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Walter Reed gets a stream of benefits, which is part of the Hobbs Act violation. Hobbs Act is the criminal statute which prevents elected officials or public officials from using their public capacity or their public office for the gain of anything of monetary value it's called a stream of benefits. Walter
right.
Reed, as the district attorney, is a member of that law firm. That law firm represents the sheriff, the insurance company for the sheriff. In the Shane Gates case, his private law firm represented the police officers who beat up Shane Gates until he was unconscious. And Walter Reed continued to prosecute Shane Gates after Shane Gates was found not guilty in 20 minutes after a 5-day trial by a 12-person jury in St. Tammany Parish. St. Tammany is very conservative, but the St. Tammany juries are starting to catch on to the fraud perpetrated on the public by the sheriff, Jack Strain, and by the former district attorney, Walter Reed. So Walter Reed continues to prosecute Shane Gates, or continued to prosecute Shane Gates, to cover up for the insurance company and to try to get a conviction of Mr. Gates on resisting arrest charges, which hadn't been brought for 7 years. And they weren't brought at the jury trial.
And it's a misdemeanor charge, right?
It's a misdemeanor charge.
So let me just...
Not only is it a misdemeanor charge, it was never originally brought, because they charged him, this happened in November 16, 2006, almost 10 years ago. And this is still going on, even though a 12-person jury after a 5-day trial found Mr. Gates not guilty of all the charges the district attorney brought.
Right, and that was in July 2012.
That's
and
right.
That, you know, now we're talking about 2015. And the new district attorney, which I think I know, I thought was there to turn things around, is now keeping these charges, which I know you've explained to me to also constitute double jeopardy. He's being charged on a misdemeanor resisting arrest for an incident that occurred almost 10 years ago, in which a jury came back with a not guilty verdict after 30 minutes. A 12-member jury. So 12, 13, 14, 15. So now we have the new, and let me just, for the listener's sake, let me just let them know a little bit about that incident in 2006, November 2006. And I did a story on it, as you know, with you, Danny, for Human Events. And I covered the story extensively, and I remember interviewing Shane on this too. I mean, basically, he pulled out of a car lot after, I think, either trying out a new car or possibly purchasing a new car. And he was, you know, just a couple of minutes from the place. And he just gets pulled over, or he pulls over because the police officer puts their lights on or flashes their lights at him. He pulls over. Next thing you know, he's getting his butt kicked really badly. We're talking about eye injuries that are... aren't going to go away. It's a lifetime of injuries, many surgeries, plastic surgery, very, very serious. They knocked him unconscious. I mean, I remember the story. They knocked him unconscious. They took him to a hospital far away from where he could have gone. We could have been at a closer hospital. They mocked him in the hospital room. I mean, this was a terrible case of police brutality. Maybe the worst case in St. Tammany in I don't know how long, but it's a pretty bad case. So we're talking about a jury that found him not guilty on any of the charges that they brought up against him, which at the time I think was fleeing arrest or drunk driving or whatever the charges were. They had no evidence to show that the allegations were true.
Right.
It was almost like a fish. It was like, well, they were trying to, in my mind, they were trying to invent things because here they got this beat up guy who's going to sue them in federal court on civil rights violations for beating him up.
And I know you know this, and I know you've covered it, but the public needs to know it. He was handcuffed behind his back when the deputy, Roger Gattardi, beat his face into the side of the road, into the concrete on the side of the road, until he was unconscious.
Unconscious, exactly.
And I think he testified that he woke up for a minute in the car and didn't know where he was, but he really didn't wake up and become conscious again until he was in the hospital sometime later.
Right, that's right. That's how bad the beating.
They fabricated, yeah. And you're right, and I know you know how these things work. They fabricated the charges to cover up for all of the very serious damage, you know, and injuries that they had done to him. He had 38 stitches. His face looked like a starfish. It was so open on the side of his eye. 38
stitches. When his wife showed up at the hospital, she couldn't even recognize him. He was so badly bruised.
She walked right by him. She didn't recognize him.
Correct. Remember that.
It's not the first time that Walter Reed has done this. Walter Reed has now been caught sending, you know, cases that involve criminal prosecution, sending cases to his ex-wife's law firm, and he goes forward with the prosecution of the opposing party, and his wife's law firm and other lawyers get those cases. But when he became involved with McCraney Systrom and became, you know, of an attorney there, they were handling all of the civil rights claims that were filed against the sheriff's office. So,
right.
Nobody's ever heard of that. The DA has an interest because he makes money and protects his own civil clients. The DA makes money himself and protects his own civil clients by prosecuting people in his official capacity as district attorney. There is no more clearer Hobbs Act violation than that.
Absolutely. And that's why he's facing very serious charges and very serious jail time for what he's done. Now, and this is what's really shocking to me, because several months back, you had let me know, Danny, that of course he had to resign, or he couldn't run again. I mean, he's under indictment. He's facing trial now, Mr. Reed. But we had a candidate, I suppose. We had somebody that we thought was part of the people, was looking to do the right thing, was looking to undo this very serious damage going on between the DA and the sheriff, very serious corruption going on. So you all elected, I think it was a special election, Warren Montgomery to be the new district attorney. Did you have a lot of hope for him? Did you think he was going to come in and do some different things?
Everybody had a lot of hope because he is and appears to be a person of personal integrity, you know, and he has gotten rid of a few people in the district attorney's office. But the people who are truly criminals and should be prosecuted, like Assistant District Attorney Nick Noria, Assistant District Attorney Ronnie Gratianet, you know, they have destroyed evidence. They have used fabricated evidence to bring charges against Shane Gates and against others. We had a really unbelievably phenomenal expert, Herbert Joe, who was a forensic expert and who came in and examined the dispatch tapes. And he found that of the 60 tracks on the dispatch tapes that Assistant District Attorney Nick Noria and some people in the sheriff's office had only produced 30 of the 60 tracks. And more alarming, and he even said he had never seen it before, you know, Dr. Herbert Joe, more alarming, the content of some of the individual tracks were altered. And when Shane's attorney confronted him about this, he admitted that he did it. And he said, I just, you know, wanted to hear the jury, you know, I wanted the jury to hear what I thought they should hear. Well, needless to say, they raised this to Judge Richard Schwartz, who was the judge at the time. Judge Richard Schwartz heard that and refused to do anything about that fabrication and alteration and destruction of evidence, refused to do anything. That's how corrupt the St. Tammany courts is. Now, it needs to be added that the judge who got assigned the case, Judge Richard Schwartz, was a former assistant district attorney for Walter Reed.
Great. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Let's get back to Warren Montgomery. I didn't completely answer your question.
Okay.
I think Warren is a person of integrity. Comes from a decent, a good family. But it's one thing to have your own personal integrity. It's another thing to have the gumption to do what you need to do to clean up a totally corrupt district attorney's office. And the district attorney's office under Walter Reed was totally corrupt, and some of the most corrupt assistant district attorneys who have committed fraud in that office for years are still there, and nobody can understand why Warren Montgomery has allowed that to continue. He's become complicitous in the fraud in the district attorney's office.
Yeah, I don't know how he does that when he comes in as sort of a reformer to change this stuff. I recall seeing an email going back and forth about Nick Noria sort of training up. Now, this is the ADA that altered evidence, which is, I think, a felony crime. This is the same one who's now training officers on how to prepare evidence for trial in their criminal cases. So this is the same person who seems to be committing crimes and now is training officers to commit crimes. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, Nick Noria was not only caught at that. Nick Noria was involved in a FINRA investment fraud scheme, and federal judge Ginger Berrigan fined Nick Noria, assistant district attorney Nick Noria, fined him $240,000.
Wow.
And
that's
so
a lot of money.
But he raised almost $4 million from investors, and it all disappeared. And he declared bankruptcy. And one woman who I met with, and I met with her attorneys, one woman had told me that she had invested almost $200,000 in one of his Nick Noria schemes. And guess what she got back from the bankruptcy? $76 out of her $200,000.
Oh, boy.
So, he is involved in that, and he was the lead person in that, and the federal judge sanctioned him $240,000, and he's still an assistant district attorney in Warren Montgomery's district attorney's office.
Yeah, so are the people now complaining to Montgomery? Are they saying, hold on a second, weren't you supposed to make changes in this district attorney's office that has all this corruption, because it seems like it's so bad that it really needs, like you said, it needs someone who has gumption to remove the criminals. And he's been there several months already. I mean, is he going to act or what?
He's been there since January. And so I guess it's 6 months. And some of the main criminals, you know, are still in the office. And nobody can imagine why. They can't. He's not an unintelligent guy. And nobody can imagine why he hasn't figured it out yet. And two community leaders and a police expert met with him on Tuesday of this week about the Shane Gates matter. And they went with all the evidence, all the documents, all of the proof of the fabricated and altered evidence. And they initiated part of the case against him was initiated by a letter that was attributed to the deputy who stopped Shane that night. And when the deputy took the stand and they showed him the letter, he said, "I've never seen that letter. I didn't write that. I didn't authorize that." They made it up. Chuck Hughes, the attorney for the sheriff, fabricated that evidence, that letter. And it's a history of fabricated, altered evidence. It's like the textbook for how you do corrupt, you know, prosecutions between sheriffs and district attorneys. But in addition to that, what you had just asked about, two community leaders and the police expert met with Warren Montgomery and the head of the criminal division, Colin Sims. And Colin Sims appears to be at least part of the problem with Warren Montgomery's office because of his association with other good old boys there in St. Tammany Parish. The community leaders met with him and said, "What is going on here?" And
they also prepared an 8-page report, which I was going through before the show, which is very detailed. It shows all of these connections, very detailed. What was Montgomery's answer?
He didn't know anything about it, as they say in the South, like a deer in headlights. Deer in the headlights.
That cannot be true. He had to know. It was in the papers. I mean, how could he not know? Of course he knew. That was the reason why, Walter Reed was indicted. I mean, he had to know.
Yeah. Hey, Raquel, how are you doing?
Hey, Donald.
Hey, Danny.
How you?
Donald,
hey,
Donald.
Donald
Ross.
Hey, Donald, how are you?
I'm okay. I am a disbarred lawyer up in New York who was the target of a DOJ probe for witness tampering conspiracy, an investigator talked to someone, nothing happened. In any event, I've been listening and I agree with everything you're saying. I've tried 77 felonies to verdict, 7 homicides, numerous federal court trials to verdict. What is so funny about, I'm from Chicago, and do you know that there's a website, Danny, that has the rankings of the most corrupt states, you know, with state politicians, and do you know who are 1 and 2?
Chicago, Illinois, and Louisiana.
Let me correct you there, man. Louisiana and Chicago. They're tied. Rob Blagojevich, all this. You know, what really bothers me is that I actually had no idea about this until I was talking to Raquel earlier. And I've done, I just read through the federal indictment of the, is it the DA and the Sun?
Oh, yeah, the DA and the Sun.
Yeah,
Walter
I read
Reed
through the 25-page indictment.
Right.
Why has Governor Jindal or the United States Attorney's Office or the Civil Rights Division in D.C. not come in and take a look at this?
Good question. Really good question.
Yeah. Excellent question. I do think that Jindal's office was onto the story because they were reading. I understood from his office that they were interested in my stories, and I had sent them some copies. I had sent them links to some of the stories that I wrote about. Because what we're talking about is just one of the cases, or just a couple of the cases, but there's many there. So there's a long history of corruption between the sheriff and the district attorney. We're expecting the sheriff to also be indicted because of some federal investigations going on currently. But the idea that Jindal is running for president, and here he's got the top state for public corruption. The state of Louisiana incarcerates more people per head than communist China. I got problems with this.
Hold on. It's actually Annie, let me ask you a question. Who are the two senators from Louisiana now?
U.S. senators? Dr. Cassidy and David Vitter.
Those are the two federal senators?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Dr. Cassidy just got elected over Mary Landrieu.
Okay.
And then Vitter's term is, occurs later on, but Vitter's running for governor, so.
Hey, you're pulling some cobwebs out of my head. One of the questions I had for you, Danny, was one thing I was very successful at. I worked for Legal Aid, the Chicago Public Defender, the murder task force in Chicago from the public defender, New York Prisoners Legal Services, Legal Aid. I've always been a civil rights kind of guy. Why the gentleman who got beat up and everything, has anyone filed a 1983 lawsuit? And what's the status of it?
Absolutely. The status of it was initially stayed. The judge, federal judge Stan Duvall, said at the first hearing, if I find out that Mr. Shane Gates was handcuffed, you're going to have a real problem. And I'm going to let this be stayed for 6 months. And
why? I let it be stayed.
He was going to let it be stayed for 6 months. While they tried to go forward with the criminal prosecution for the Heck versus Humphrey thing.
Yeah.
But Shane Gates's case has about 20 claims, malicious prosecution, fraudulent prosecution, fraudulent misrepresentation and destruction of evidence. The only claim that has any application, where Heck versus Humphrey would ever apply, is the excessive force claim. And despite the fact that there's 19 other claims, all with substantial, documentary evidence, the judge stayed the whole thing.
So there's been no 12B6 motion, no summary judgment motion, nothing.
Yeah, they filed them, but they were stayed. And Mr. Gates filed a second case that has nothing to do with the excessive force claim. And he named the judge, the attorney general, the judge who acted outside of his judicial capacity and created, according to the Supreme Court cases that we found, created.
You mean the state judges?
Yeah, the state judges.
Yep. Okay. Gotcha.
Created treason. The attorney general was involved and complicit in covering up for the judges and in being involved in the prosecution of Mr. Gates as well. And none of that has anything to do with an excessive force claim, and therefore nothing to do with Heck versus Humphrey.
But how did you guys get around the qualified immunity for the judge?
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet. Oh, they refused to even answer. They refused to even answer the lawsuit. So we filed a motion, to put them, for entry of a preliminary default judgment. And only then did they come in in a panic and file an answer. And well, then they wanted to consolidate it, and that, you know, and I think it got too. When this case goes forward, it will go forward. When this case goes forward, what they're all concerned about, and the federal judges are concerned about, is it will open the whole door and Pandora's box, and everybody will see that that all of the court systems and the district attorneys are so inherently corrupt in Louisiana that it even involves, you know, the federal courts.
Well, of course, absolutely. Danny, if you get a chance, if you have pen and paper, Google USA Today 1983 litigation, or USA Today Bivens actions.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, because you sound like you've been practicing a long time.
37 years.
All right. How many judgments do you think that the Department of Justice, the United States actually, has actually paid out on Bivens claims, which are, you know, the federal sister to the 1983 in the last 50 years? And I mean, actually paid the check.
I would guess none.
Four.
Yeah, well, that's pretty close to none.
I know, and I mean, it is
pretty bad.
It is, and I think the corollary to that is, if it's like that in the federal system, you have absolutely no chance. Yes.
The only thing, I think that's changing because of, one, social media, and two, people are saying, we won't stand this and we won't take this anymore. If when we started out in Shane Gates' case 9 years ago, nobody could believe that we were filing the pleadings and accusing all of these high-ranking good old boys of the crimes that they were actually committing, and that we were, you know, gradually, you know, finding evidence for and proving. And nobody could believe that it happened. And nobody could believe that Shane and his wife were able to survive it all. And Shane,
is that the attorney who was suspended for filing this stuff?
Yeah, that's me. I'm the attorney that was suspended in state court.
Yes.
For doing all of that stuff. I'm not suspended. I put the notice, the Louisiana Supreme Court, glad you mentioned that, the Louisiana Supreme Court, acting on a bar complaint filed by Walter Reed himself, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, asked me to come in and give a sworn statement and bring all of the files of all criminal defendants in pending criminal cases in St. Tammany Parish,
and what
based on a campaign, you know, thing by Walter Reed, a complaint by Walter Reed, and he
simply
got
a complaint by one person.
Yeah, well, and no, he had his little judges who used to be ADAs in St. Tammany Parish, you know, filed the same thing, and they asked me to come in, give a sworn statement about cases for pending criminal defendants, and bring the criminal defendants' files and turn them over to them. And I told the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, a guy named Robert Kennedy, not the good Robert Kennedy, but obviously this Robert Kennedy, I told him, I said, I'm going to show up, you know, I've got a subpoena, I'm going to show up, but I will never give you a criminal defendant's file because you and your office have no integrity. And Walter Reed will get those files in 5 minutes. And so I showed up at the hearing with a motion to quash the sworn statement and a motion to quash the subpoena, deuces take them. And I think it was strong. But they never gave my motions to quash to the Supreme Court. They never even gave them to the Supreme Court. I took them to the Supreme Court to file those motions myself. The Supreme Court refused to accept my motions to quash.
And so you're still suspended in Louisiana.
So instead, yes, instead of filing my motions with the court,
mm-hmm.
what they did was they filed a motion to a petition for interim suspension of me.
And Based
on nothing. Based on
your refusal to turn over those files?
Yeah, and based on the fact that I filed pleadings that made the judges and the system and the district attorney in St. Tammany Parish, you know, look as though they were corrupt and stuff like that. Well, they are corrupt, and I'm sure the pleadings suggested that or said that, but they never charged me with anything, the court. They never gave me a hearing.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
How tough are the FOIA? Not how tough. How open are they for Freedom of Information Act requests? Because I do a lot of these in Florida, the Sunshine Act, in New York, Freedom of Information Law, and the feds, the FOIA, and I have actually won 3 appeals to the Office of Professional Responsibility in the feds with, you know, asking for things like all communications between. And I should back up, Danny. Have you ever heard of a lawyer named Mark Dreyer?
I think I've heard that name. I don't know.
He's the largest lawyer fraud in the country. He took $2 billion from a New York City developer who makes Trump look like the Bears last year, and then set up a 300-member law firm, forging hedge funds.
Wow.
He was on 60 Minutes 3 times, only person other than a dignitary, and I did 2 years with him. He was editor-in-chief of the Harvard Law Review, the smartest man I've ever met, wrote my habeas petition. But he taught me how to write FOIAs, and has anyone submitted things like, you know, to the state of Louisiana on the local, county, state, and actually the federal level, every, I know I can't swear, Raquel, LEO component, asking for all communication of any kind, whether email, written, whatever, regarding what your action, and that, you know, when they send you a $27,000 bill saying, sure, pay for the 5,000 pages, you get through it with it is a newsworthy story, and most important, the DOJ actually did one favor. You can pay $4 and get it on DVD.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
So, have you guys filed like extensive FOIAs asking for all communications, you know, inner office, text, cell phones, individual, and see what, because that should be an independent board. In New York, it's the AG has a separate component that deals with that.
Well, the disciplinary council, the Louisiana Attorney Disciplinary Board, and the disciplinary council, whose head is a fellow named Charles Platzmar, they deal with it here, and the disciplinary board is just as corrupt as the courts in Louisiana.
No, but what about the FOIAs? Have you guys filed FOIAs?
No, we haven't. No, we haven't.
You know what? Have Raquel hook you up with me privately.
We will.
After we hang
that.
Excuse me. I'm going through a child custody thing. I never used to stutter. Have Raquel send you my Facebook thing and send me a friend request, or my Raquel, send them my email, and I will
I'll send you the email. Yeah, Mr. Abel's not on Facebook.
I will send you several sample FOIAs to state and federal officials, and I'll even, to back up what I say, sure, I'll send a letter from the OPA overturning the ATF and ordering them to turn over the documents. But they always claim, as they will in yours, I guarantee it, they're going to take my son's life. They're going to claim the Freedom of Information Act and Privacy Act exception is there's a pending criminal investigation, and turning this over would compromise that. And that kind of, that's what they always said. I mean, I filed hundreds of these. And it's so unfair, because if you actually got the data, and sometimes you do, and you know, like Wayne Gretzky said, you miss 100% of the shots you never take.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's
and
true.
I will send you, I'll send you a great FOIA. And I'll send it down.
I just give a station break right now. And also, I have Terry on the line. Terry is a civil rights activist in St. Tammany Parish, Terry King, who I've met over the years concerning all of these problems. He's a real go-getter. Kind of guy, really took down a corrupt coroner, was really the kingpin in taking down that coroner. Really nice man. But before I do that, he is on the line, Terry. Just want to let the listeners know you are listening to Reach Out America Radio, sponsored by World Integrity News Network. This program is called Imploding the Illusion, and my name is Raquel Okai, and I'm your host. Our call-in number is...
And guess what, everybody? My name is Bobby Biesinger, and I'm your super host. How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, hey, Bobby. Hey, that's my that's my volunteer boss, because I just volunteer, but he's my boss.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey,
everybody. I got some questions to ask. I've been listening to the show. I don't just get involved. Actually, I haven't been well in a while, and I kind of backed away from my job responsibilities a lot. So I'm trying to get out here and get in the middle of these shows again and see what's really going on. So I have a question to ask the guys. Now, I heard you talk about Bobby Jindal. I was watching the debate Monday night, the first one that Donald Trump wasn't there. I was really impressed with some of the stuff he said. How long has Bobby Jindal been governor of Louisiana?
This is his second term.
Seven years.
Now, I'm looking at Louisiana's numbers. I'm looking at Louisiana's economy. And I'm going to tell you, I lived there for 10 years. I love New Orleans, Louisiana. I think the man's made a lot of really good decisions in the state. I think you guys were a little unfair to him earlier on some of the stuff, but that's just my perspective. But there again, I was there during the Mark Morial, all that stuff for Louisiana. My point is... I know we're talking about St. Tammany, and what a major debacle that whole parish is. It was a debacle when I lived there. It's right there real close to Orleans Parish. But let's talk about the things. I mean, I know that you got a lot of corruption there. And Raquel, I heard you talking about some of you look at Louisiana, and you got to understand Louisiana for what it is. It's an extremely uneducated state. Half of your students don't even complete school. They aren't even encouraged to go to school. A lot of Louisiana is still farmland. There's still family businesses, the bayous and all that. They still create their own life there. So Louisiana is stepping up, and the federal government's stepping up, and the people there are stepping up to try to end all this corruption in St. Tammany. How far should it go? Seriously, I mean, how far is it going to go?
How far should it go? Remember William Jefferson, the guy who had $200,000 cash in his freezer?
That was a rebate.
Pardon?
A
That was a rebate.
Oh, that was that. Six for fish for five by finders
I'm
keepers.
Sorry, Bobby.
Finders
I don't know.
He said he had no other place to put it.
I don't know what it will take to do this, but we have had five, and soon to be six when you include Jack Strain,
yep,
parish sheriffs indicted and convicted in Louisiana in the last 4 years. Five, soon to be six. One was the head of the meth operation for his parish, and was involved in making and selling, you know, meth. And it just, one was involved in fixing charges and getting money for fixing charges. And we can say it now. I couldn't say it before, but we can say it now. Belinda Parker Brown. And I, Belinda Parker Brown is the head of Louisiana United, the civil rights group. And Belinda Parker Brown and I were asked to, and not being shy, we did go and interview four prostitutes who were the conduits for money to fix charges. That money went to Walter Reed. And
Walter Reed, the sheriff?
The former district attorney.
Oh, my God.
Jack Strain, Jack Strain is the sheriff.
Sure.
And Jack
Strain,
in fact, Jack Strain had a federal court order that he stop, that he should not confiscate people's guns. Because we had a problem where you had the sheriff and his deputies running around without warrants, banging on people's doors, stealing their property, selling them in a black market. Of course, it's illegal to sell firearms, whether you're the sheriff or not, without a license. So we had a judge actually specifically tell Jack Strain that he is not allowed to take people's guns anymore. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely correct. It is a federal permanent injunction against Jack Strain because they would seize people's guns, and guns don't get processed through the system like a car does. You know, asset forfeiture. Go ahead, Terry.
Let me try to answer this guy's question.
Well, Bobby, what you just said is one of the most fascinating things because, you know, the asset forfeiture law is now becoming more powerful than the criminal code, where you they come in and they take the property before they indict.
They freeze your assets. You're under investigation, so it leaves you not the ability not to be able to continue your activity that you're doing. And I can kind of understand that to a degree. I mean, it would be kind of not very good business. I mean, for instance, if you gave your kid the keys to your Mercedes and all of a sudden you took the car away from him and left the keys in the, you know, let him keep his keys, what to keep him from driving it? Okay.
Yeah, but where is the probable cause? Because the civil forfeiture, the level of probable cause, reasonable suspicion, the level of judicial oversight over civil forfeiture. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal over the District of Minnesota's U.S. attorney, who was the head of the ATF, was just blindly using civil forfeiture as a way to force people to cooperate. And
well, you know,
they freeze the assets. And then no one knows what to do, and you got to hire a lawyer for $50,000. So, boom.
As again, you can say, welcome George Bush for bringing us the Patriot Act. That's
it. There you go. Agree with you
Let me explain something to you guys. I'm an equal opportunity hater. If it comes from the establishment, when it comes from the establishment, when it comes to Democrat, Republicans, I don't like any of them. I don't think they're our friends. I don't think they're part of the American society. I think they're all about what they can do and what they can make for themselves, and they're all about controlling us to do what we want to do. I want to take a minute before I leave the show, guys, and say I have listened to some of the shows in the past, and I really appreciate you guys keeping this one in perspective and its parameters. I will expect that to continue. Great show tonight, Raquel. You're doing an awesome job for us. If Donald gives you any trouble, reach across with a broom and beat him.
Can I ask you one more question?
Thank you, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby, I would like, I don't know if we're friends on Facebook or whatever, but I'm in New York City, and I have some connections with the ACLU that I still maintain. And I don't know if you read about how the ACLU, and I want to say it's like down south, they just filed a major federal lawsuit, Kentucky, you know, about the kids in the daycare center who were handcuffed in the special needs center.
I got into a major argument with one of my admins. You know, I'm a good Southern boy, okay? So I don't have probably very many liberal bones in my body. Let me tell you how I grew up. When they talk about this child being disabled, he has ADHD,
mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, I've never met anybody that I considered that to be a disability,
right.
Number one thing. Number two thing is, you know, if I had acted out that way towards that police officer, I watched the video. The police officer never one time raised his voice to the child. He was talking to him the whole time, explaining about the consequences of his actions. And if I had been there, I would have walked in and shook the man's hand, and that boy would have still been wearing my handprint on his butt today. The problem we have today in American society is the ACLU and all these other people trying to tell us how to raise our children. They're trying to create a statist type atmosphere to where we don't even own our own children.
They get millions of dollars coming back in on NGO money because they appear on Fox News.
Exactly.
I agree with you 1,000%, but I still have Raquel. I'll hook up with her tomorrow. I have somebody who I trust with the ACLU who maybe can hook up with that other office. But Bobby, I agree with you. I would have struck the man's hand.
I mean, it's just the fact being we spend too much time running our children to psychiatrists because we're scared of CPS and DHS and all those other little government agencies that want to be in part of our child raising. And instead of recognizing bad behavior is just bad behavior and taking them little shits outside with a belt and making them understand there are consequences for bad behavior, we run them over and give them some pills.
Yep.
I mean, if I had done that as a child, I would probably at 50 years old still be walking funny.
Well, I'll leave you with this, Bobby. I'm gonna sign off. I'm in a custody battle. My child's mother took the kid down to Florida, claiming that her 94-year-old grandfather, wonderful man, I love him, had a massive catastrophic stroke. And a friend of mine sent me a picture of my child's mother, who I'm not married to, on the beach in Fort Lauderdale. And I wrote the judge and I said, in 1984, my grandmother had a catastrophic stroke. She was pooping herself, peeing herself. She was 90% paralyzed. If I would have asked my mother, Bobby, well, we were moving her. But I go to Great America. I'm from Illinois. You know what the response would have been? Just slap me in the face. She would have said decisively, Donald, we're not here on vacation. We're here to take care of grandma. And like you just said, Bobby, it would have been swift, decisive, and my mom would have hit me with a belt, slapped me in the face and said, help, I was 15, continue helping move grandma.
For you having a selfish type attitude like that, I would have got my butt kicked. because, you know, when I was out in the in my neighborhoods, our problem, we don't have any communities anymore, any community responsibility. When I was out in my community and I did something wrong in another kid's house, his mama spanked me. When I got home, my mama was in, because she's already called my mama, you can bet that. And my mama was at the door with a belt. And when she got through, and wait till your daddy gets home. You know, you didn't disrespect the family. You didn't go out and disrespect the family name in your community when I was growing. And we got to get back to that guy.
I'm going to hang up, Bobby. Great talking to you. And Raquel, believe me, she'll hit me with that switch.
I got to run, too. I got a lot of stuff I got to do. So, Raquel, you and your guest, have a great night. I'll be on the chat line if you guys want me to join back in a little while. I'm working on We Are One America. It's going to be the most amazing organization that's ever hit the American people. You guys need to really be a part of it. We're going to be promoting it. It's all about being a good neighbor and building community activities from the state level and getting the federal government reeled back in from our state level and leaving Washington, D.C. alone to their own devices and let us start writing in the monster from our own homes.
Yes,
sir. Anyway, guys, my name is Bobby. Great show, Raquel. And I will be back from time to time. You guys will hear from me a lot more on these shows. I'm back feeling good again and back healthy.
You know, Bobby, you know, I just want to put a plug in for her before I hang up. Is Raquel is one of the most dedicated people, Bobby. And I've gotten to know her on a really personal level. And she has 2 children who are special needs children. She is absolutely the most giving person I have ever met in my life, actually. And
I'll tell you,
where she will reach out, and, you know, I've helped place 2 people who were on your show in homeless shelters or whatever with her help, and Raquel is a gem. You will never find somebody with a heart as big as her, that's virtuous, honest, just wanting to help.
Donald,
thank you so much,
Donald.
You forgot the last, the other part you always tell me, that I'm 10 times smarter than you.
You're preaching. You are. You're 9 times smarter than me.
9 times smarter than you. Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that, Donald. Really, you're a great guy too. Yeah. Thank you,
Donald. You're preaching to the. I know what a star I have with Raquel. She is awesome. But I have to tell you guys a little cute story real quick about Raquel. She's probably going to get a little red in the face when I tell this little story. About a week and a half, I sent Raquel a text message. I said, I need you to call me. And just like a kid, first thing out of her, what did you send me back, Raquel? Do you remember?
Yeah. Am I in trouble?
Am I in trouble? Anyway, keep up the work, guys. When you're on the network, show yourself some respect. Show your part. Show your other people on the radio with you the same respect. And you guys just keep on rocking and doing a great job. Again, my name is Bobby. Thank you for calling Johnny Reach Out America. Raquel, keep kicking butt. And I'm here. You guys have
you
a good night.
It.
Keep it up. Hey, Danny.
Thanks again,
Danny,
Bobby.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
And Raquel, get Danny my info. I'm hanging up.
Okay, well, I definitely will.
All right. And you know what? You're 9.5 times smarter than me.
There you go. I'm inching closer. All right, Don. Thank you. And Don, if you want to go back later, the second hour, we're going to be talking about the president. Actually, we're at the top of the hour already. I just want to let everyone know what we're about at Reach Out America, and it's something that the president who just got off the line, Bobby Biesinger, and I have spoken about extensively, and that's that we want to be united. We want an America that's united. We're tired of the left v. right v. left, Republican versus Democrat. We're all people, and I generally believe that that when you respect life, when you respect human life, you can do anything. Anything is possible. Those are the kind of things that I'm looking for in politicians. I'm looking for them to respect life. It's not a right thing. It's not a left thing. It's just a human thing. It's a human thing. It's a freedom thing. I think that our country has just gone so far, so much into debt, so much into money, so much into power, that this is not what our founders had created for us. They had wanted a limited government. They wanted a government ruled by the people. They wanted the people to choose their leaders. And what has happened is just such a disaster where we have the federal government, you know, doing thousands of things they shouldn't be doing. And what the federal government, in my opinion, should be doing is just protecting our liberties. So they should be looking at the states, making sure the states are protecting our liberties, and then maybe intercede when they're not. That's what I'm looking for. That's how I read the substance of the Constitution. I think that the Constitution is lost and gone. I don't know where it is, but I wish it would come back. I'm going to just make Terry King was on the phone before Danny, and unfortunately I couldn't bring him in. A lot of people were talking. I was trying to sort of fit him in, and he hung up. But we're going to go to a five-minute break now, and I'm going to call him up and ask him to call back. I definitely have a lot of questions for him about that meeting with the new district attorney in St. Tammany. I want to see how that went.
Thank you very much, Raquel, for inviting me on the show tonight. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming. If you want to hang on, we will be back. I'm going to try to get Terry back on the line. And we're going to go ahead and take a 5-minute break.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Danny. Thanks, everyone. We'll be right back.
I'll hang on. Bye.
Okay, great.
The common goal should be turning America to its constitutional republic roots.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work, a lot of sacrifice that people made to accomplish certain things.
That actually didn't belong to the federal government in the first place. It belongs to you and I.
Some hope for the youth of our country.
This is my next phase of my mission.
The next greatest generation.
If you're not mad, you're not paying attention. And if you're not paying attention, you're part of the problem.
Pride and joy of America. Old glory. It's time to take it back, my fellow patriots.
Hey, everybody. John Wolf here. Here to do the Take Back America challenge.
The pride and joy of America. Old glory. It's time to take it back, my fellow patriots.
Hey, everybody. John Wolf here. Here to do the Take Back America challenge. What is this challenge? Is it to take back America for only one specific kind of people? No. Is it to take back America for all the conservatives or people who deem that they're the only ones who should be here, as I've heard? No. What this is to take back the pride in America. Take back the love, the loyalty, the respect, the honor that we have with calling ourselves Americans. That's what this Take Back America is. It's a small step on hopefully a path to restoring America, to restoring the faith, the hope, and the dream that is the United States of America. You see that flag flying over my shoulder? It's not the wind pushing that flag, folks. That flag is being held up by the last breath of every single man and woman who ever served and whomever will serve. That is their breath, their spirit, their drive.
I'm Denise Freeman. I'm Ruth Sellers. I'm Josh. Charlene Bond. This is the Take Back America Challenge, and these colors don't run.
I'm Mark Hoffman, host of Patriot Nation Radio, and I am going to participate in the Take Back America Challenge. Remember this, folks, these colors don't run.
My name's Lisa, and I'm accepting the Take Back America Challenge.
I am doing the Take America Back Challenge. Now I challenge every American to do this.
This is my Take Back America Challenge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States
of America.
And to the republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God.
Indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
Welcome back. You're listening to Reach Out America, Blog Talk Radio. Imploding the Illusion. I'm your host, Raquel Okiai. We are sponsored by World Integrity News Network. Thank you for listening in. We've been talking about an explosive cases, several cases going on in St. Tammany Parish, Louisiana, for the first hour. And I'm just getting a message from Terry. I have Danny Abel on the phone. He is a civil rights attorney from the area, and he's leading the fight, the charge against public corruption in St. Tammany. Thanks for staying on with me, Danny. Okay, hold on a second. All right, so we have two different callers that are going to be calling back in, which were my guests for the first hour, and that was Danny Abel, who's a civil rights attorney from Louisiana. And we're covering just this huge story about police brutality and stealing firearms and forging documents and deleting tapes, and really serious charges against public officials. District attorney has already been indicted. He's facing trial. And it seems like the sheriff will also be indicted. That's what the local news, that he is under investigation because of all these things happening. So we had one of the attorneys, civil rights, and actually the civil rights activist in Louisiana who's going to call in, he's texting me. He has no cell service right now, so that's just the reason why he's not calling in. If anybody, okay, let's see. If anybody wants to call in, the number is 347-850-1243. Again, that's 347-850-1243. Need to see. Okay. We're just going to restart that program, then we'll get everybody on the phone again. And I also wanted to definitely talk about the GOP primary, GOP debate last night. We had a second tier on earlier in the evening, and then we had the first tier of candidates. Including Donald Trump, many others. Really interesting stuff. I took a lot of notes on it. I wasn't really happy with, I guess, I liked Cruz. I don't think they gave him enough time to talk, which was unfortunate. I've always been a fan of Huckabee. I think he's a good candidate for presidency. I think he can handle the job. I met him personally once in Manhattan at a fundraiser. I was running for New York City Council at the time, and he sat with me for about 5 minutes and told me what he thought I should do with campaigning for my race. And he was a very, very nice man. But that's not the reason why I would suggest to support him. But it might be one of the reasons why I like him. But he also has a pretty good record, and he talks about the Constitution, he talks about liberty, and he looks at things that other people might not look at, like CPS stuff. He had Justina Pelletier case on his program, Justina Pelletier's family on his program, to discuss medical kidnapping out of Boston, and so he takes these issues seriously, so that's something that I respect that he does. So I kind of liked him, Huckabee. Not that others agreed with me, but on that second tier, I really liked Pataki. He's a former governor of New York State, 3-term governor. The reason why I like him is he talked about unity. He talked about a country that's divided. And I don't think I heard that from, probably heard it from a couple of other people, but he brought it on in the onset of the debate, and he seemed very sincere to me, and it just seemed like other candidates, they want to divide the country, and I think we really, really needed a president that's going to bring us together, and that's what we're doing at World Integrity News Network. We are reaching out to America to tell you that we are united. We can be united on the same principles. It's the same thing any of us would want, and those are God-given rights of freedom. And we don't need excessive government on our backs. We don't need. I think our new president should cut the entire government in half, the entire federal government in half. Just stop it. Stop collecting the money. Stop doing all these things. Let the free market work. A free market can't work that way. It can't work with just government employees. Those are the people getting jobs, and guess who they're paid by? Well, the taxpayer. So what we really need in this country is jobs in the private sector. We need the private sector to grow. We need the economy to, and that's how we build the economy. And I didn't hear any of that. Not to the extent I wanted to. I think Lindsey Graham was a complete lunatic. He's a war hawk. All he cares about is going to war. There's other things going on right here in the USA. And that's not to say that I don't think that there are terrorists, Islamic terrorists, not afraid to say the word, Islamic terrorists who want to destroy America, have stated they want to destroy America. They're very dangerous. They've attacked us before plenty of times. Enough. I don't want that. But that doesn't mean we say to hell with America, to hell with the Constitution, to hell with the Bill of Rights. No, that's not what we do. We use whatever means possible to protect our nation, but we don't sacrifice the Constitution for it. There was some, I think Rand Paul made that point, which was good. He was in the first year presidential candidate. I think the other thing Huckabee made, I'm going through my notes. Huckabee made some good points on just getting rid of the EPA, the IRS, size of government. Those are the kind of things they like. That's why Huckabee stands out to me. To get rid of the mandates on the states. Well, what would that mean? Well, the federal government has to shrink. It has to shrink in half. Why are they making determinations for the states? Sometimes they can, sometimes they should. When the states are limiting people's liberty, yes. Then I want the federal government to come in and do something. But in absence of that, making mandates on states let the federal taxpayer pay all your bills. Just do what we say. That's not America. That's not the Constitution. That's not the free market. That's not how we build the economy. How we build the economy is we fire all these people in the government who are feeding into just paying more taxes. We don't need them. Let's put our money into the private sector. Let the American people do it. That's how it should work. I didn't hear a lot of domestic policy. Maybe that was just because the topic was more foreign policy. I'm not sure. But I would have liked to hear more. Let me just get to Rubio. I'm sorry. You know what? I was obsessed. I was looking at his ears. He has really, really big ears. I know it's strange to say, but I was looking at his ears so big. And then I also remembered that the last time he was speaking at, I guess, I think it was a GOP convention, I suppose. And then he went to take a drink of water, and he did. And then it was all over YouTube, him doing it in slow motion. It was so funny. So unfortunately, I wasn't paying attention to what he was saying. I'm not a big fan of Rubio for other reasons. I tried to contact his office several years ago when I first moved to Florida. I reached out to him as my U.S. senator, and I had a very serious topic I wanted to discuss in an email. I expressed expressed it to him, asked what his office could do to help. And I think about 6 months later, I received a form letter saying, thank you for your interest in Florida's education. I didn't appreciate that. I mean, you can't blame Rubio. Some staff member made a mistake, but maybe you should make sure your staff member, you know, actually reads the emails. You know, that would help. Yeah, you're my representative. Hello. Read what I have to say. Not maybe you, but maybe your staff person should, and answer it appropriately. I'm going to get on Jeb Bush. I'm not a fan of Jeb Bush, mainly. I'm going to say mainly because he is a hypocrite. He is a huge supporter of Common Core. Common Core is a federally subsidized education system that the Department of Education has now sort of forced onto states. Well, take this or you lose all this money. So how are you going to succeed? How are you going to beat another state that has Common Core? He was the proponent of Common Core. So he gets on the stage and he's on the stage and he's asked a question about Department of Education and federal involvement in education. And he says, well, I think it should be up to the state. So you think, okay, well, so do I. I think it should be up to state. I think it should be up to the local school board. I think it should go all the way down to the town level, or county level. I don't even think the state level should be involved. But so now he's standing there saying, no, I think it's the state should have the right to, because then you can petition your representatives and so on, and you can get action done when it's done at a state level. Yeah, he's got a point. But that's not what he was pushing. In fact, the exact donors of Common Core, the big donors, the big money makers, the rainmakers of Common Core, are the same donors of Jeb Bush's campaign. So this is a guy, this is, you know, that's what really offended me about him. Forget about, you know, I don't know. He said he cut tax, that bounced budget, $9 billion in reserves. I mean, I have a real issue with the way the Department of Children and Families is run here in Florida. I think Jeb Bush had an opportunity to do something good, right, stop taking the federal money, but he was all for it. So Jeb Bush actually likes the federal government involved in the state because he wants, it seems to me, he has a little bit of a history of taking federal funds, wanting federal funds as governor, and using those federal funds to, you know, distribute through the state. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but when it comes to the Department of Human Health Services, Florida right now is getting a lot of money from the federal government, so we basically have to do what they say. So how is this being state run? How is this protecting state rights? Okay, you cut taxes, great, glad you did. But you support Common Core. You want the federal government to determine curriculum or standards. You want to call it standards? I can call it standards. Let's call it standards, Jeb Bush. You want the federal government to instigate the standards and tell the states, look, either take all our money, taxpayer money, federal dollars, which is our money, and do it or you're done. All the other states are going to be way ahead of you because they have all this money we're going to give them. Of course, Jeb Bush, even though he's not governor now in Florida, of course he's accepting it. He pushed for it. He traveled around the state supporting it. They were trying to call it something else like Florida standards. But I have children in the school system. It's not Florida standards. It's Common Core. The textbooks say so. This is a federal this is a federal curriculum developed by four or five people, the big guys, the big money, the rainmakers, and not by the school boards and the parents and the teachers and the local level politicians. You can go and knock on their door and say, hey, I don't really like this curriculum. It's not really working. What else? You got anything else in mind? You can't do that with the governor. You can't do that with the feds in the federal government. You can't reach out to your senator. U.S. Senator, I tried. I tried getting in touch with Rubio. He didn't answer me. How do you think they're going to be able to respond to problems you have on a local level with your education system? Well, they don't. But what they do is shell out the money. Shell out the money into the states. The states got to do what they say. Otherwise, they're going to lose. And what is the result? Jeb Bush standing there telling us, I support states' rights. And he's a hypocrite. I supported it before I was against it. Isn't that John Kerry's line? Didn't the Republican Party do an entire media campaign against John Kerry for being a flip-flopper? In particular, the point where he said, I was for it before I was against it. I mean, why aren't they calling out Jeb Bush? Jeb Bush was for Common Core before he was against it, but he's not really, he's not against it. He was for it, but he's for states' rights. I mean, it doesn't, it's a non sequitur. It doesn't make any sense. Jeb Bush, I really was offended. So he's going to, at least say something else. Say, look, I think in this instance, this curriculum is so fabulous. It supersedes anything else. We've got the proof. We know that our kids are going to do so much better with this Common Core standards, federal level standards. And I believe in it. And I would have appreciated that. I would have said, okay, he's being honest. And I would appreciate that. He would have scored 2 points with me for being honest with his position. But rather, he got up there. I suppose he was trying to pander to the party, but who are generally, for states' rights, Republicans that are against government involvement, federal government involvement in the states, very much so. I hear a lot of that in Florida. And Jeb Bush says it. He says it like he should. But does he do it? Right there was our example that not only does he not do it, but he tells you that he does and he doesn't. It's sort of worse. I think this is even worse than John Kerry's doublespeak. I really wish Fox News, I really wish the Republican Party would call him out on that. But for some reason, they're being his cheerleader, and I think that's the only reason why. Maybe he got a boost from the debates last night. I don't know. I haven't checked the stats yet. I was a little disappointed with the whole bashing Donald Trump, which was absolutely ridiculous. I like Donald Trump because he told the truth. That was really, really awesome the way he said, look, I pay them, I give donations. A couple of years later, I need something, I give them a call on the phone, I say, hey, remember me, Donald Trump, I gave you X amount a couple of years ago, and I get my bill passed. And he not only did he say that, but he said, and that's wrong. And that needs to be stopped. So he got up there and he told you the complete truth. And the media jump all over him? I don't think so. He told you the truth. Look, this is how it goes. I have a lot of money. I give these politicians money. A couple of years later, I need something. I call them up. They do what I say. Okay, this is wrong. This must be changed. And Donald Trump understood that. Not only does he understand it, but he wasn't afraid to tell us, which was absolutely incredible. I'm so proud of him. Like, thank you, Donald Trump. And you know what? You can have it. He was being questioned about his television show. Hey, folks, television show. It's a script. Everything's scripted on television. It's entertainment part. Certainly his show was partly entertainment. I didn't watch it, but I don't care what he says on his show. It's part of a script. I mean, it's a script. I mean, why are you even asking him? I don't want to know what he talked about on his television program. I want to know what his ideas are for America. I mean, to put him in a corner about talking about something on your program, it absolutely made no sense to me. It was like a hit job or something. And the other thing that didn't make sense to me about Donald Trump was, why were they talking about him in the second tier debate? He wasn't a part of their debate. He was in the first tier. I was confused. I think the first question asked, or one of the first questions asked were, certainly the discussion was around Donald Trump. Why are they talking about Donald Trump and not telling me what they want to do in the United States of America as president? Well, because the media made it that way. I said, that was unfair. I really, really didn't like what they did to Cruz, Ted Cruz. You know, he's a popular guy around conservatives. Why? Because he sort of also says it like it is oftentimes. Media doesn't like that. I find him to be very honest. He calls people out on what he thinks they're doing wrong. He's not afraid to speak his mind. He's not afraid to give us his opinions on things. I think he's not afraid to listen to the American people. That's a good trait. I think a whole entire hour went by without Ted Cruz even being given an opportunity to say hello. That was really unfortunate. I was disappointed in that.